on Friday nights every week. When we come home from shul, shortly thereafter, when we come to the table, the challah is covered. Throughout Kiddush, the challah remains covered. Anyone tell me a reason why? There's actually three reasons, but the most famous reason.
So it doesn't get embarrassed.
It doesn't get embarrassed. Normally the halacha is that a person makes hamotzi first, and on Shabbos we have to chiyuv to make Kiddush to show kavod to Shabbos, and we make Kiddush on wine. So in order not to embarrass the challah, because when challah turns red, it's very embarrassing. So in order that the challah shouldn't quote-unquote be embarrassed, and the challah doesn't really get embarrassed, it's a certain sensitivity that we show. So imagine, by the way, there's two other reasons that are brought down in the Rishonim why we cover the challah. But that's the one I think that everybody knows. So it's not to quote-unquote embarrass the challah. So imagine the scene, says Rav David Leibowitz, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. He said about a fellow who comes home from shul on Friday night, and he walks into his house, and the table's not set, and there are toys on the floor, or whatever else, and he gets very angry. And he starts to yell at his wife. Maybe he starts to yell at his children. He says, so unbelievable. Here the challah on the table is covered so that it shouldn't be embarrassed, while he's embarrassing his wife and his children. What sense does that make? There is a pasuk in this week's parsha, in Parshas Bahar, in Isser, in the Torah, of Lo Sonu Isha Samiso. One is not allowed to hurt, to cause pain to his friend in something that's called Onas Tevorim, a very serious Isser that we don't think about enough. Because in America, it's a big thing to diss people, to say a line, and sometimes it's just teasing and it's good fun, but the line between just joking around and hurting somebody's feelings is so slight. And it's so easy to hurt someone's feelings. And just because you look and you say, but he was laughing. Of course he was laughing. He doesn't want to look like a baby. So many times a person laughs, even though they really don't think it's funny, even though their feelings are hurt. And Chazal, based on the Pesukim in the Torah, say very, very severe things about a person who hurts someone else's feelings, particularly with words. The Gemara in Bava Metzia says, Godol anoas tvorim yosemi bagufa. Anoas tvorim, hurting somebody with words, is more stringent and more severe than hurting someone's body. Can someone tell me why that should be? Everybody knows, sticks and stones may break my bones, but names will never harm me. Everybody knows a lie, because it's a big lie. Sticks and stones may break your bones, is true, but names will always hurt me. Names hurt. When people say harsh things, it hurts. So why should Onas Dvarim? Think about what you say. Why is Onas Dvarim worse than Onas Guf? Yasi? Getting hurt physically could heal. But people remember, as Abaisi spoke about this week, people remember 70, 80 years later. Not that Abaisi remembers from 70, 80 years later. But Mir Sashem. When a person can remember, even in their old age, people, older people that I have spoken to have told me things that have hurt their feelings. People have hurt their feelings when they were children. And the positive also. They remember somebody who made them feel good. And I told you this a few weeks ago, I believe. And remember this line. People may not remember what you say or do, but they will remember how you made them feel. People may not remember what you say or do, but they will remember how you made them feel. Listen to an incredible story. Everybody here knows of the Chofetz Chaim. The Chofetz Chaim told over when he was young, his father was a big Talmud Chacham. He had learned by Reb Chaim Volozhin, and the greatest students of the Vilna Gaon, an unbelievable Torah leader. And his father, however, God forbid, was nifter when he was young. He was orphaned at a relatively young age. And his mother remarried to a very simple person who lived in Raden, a person who would take care of her. So she married him. And Chofetz Chaim was about 16 years old, and he came to visit her. And it was the first time, things are very different back then, first time he met his stepfather. He had already married his mother. And the first time he met her, the stepfather was extremely impressed with him. And he said to his mother, something that wasn't necessarily so nice, he says, I have a daughter who's 26, 10 years older than the Chofetz Chaim. If you'll give your son, if your son will marry my daughter, then I'll stay married to you. Otherwise, we're done. So she came crying to the Chofetz Chaim, her son, to tell him what her husband had said. You imagine such a thing? And the Chofetz Chaim immediately said, so I'll marry her. I'll marry her. So he comes back to yeshiva, and he tells his chavrusa, I'm a chassid. His chavrusa says, to who? Because the Chofetz Chaim, top bacher, you know, and everyone wanted him. You know, so he says, who? It's a wealthy girl. It's a hush of a family. Like, what's the name? He says, no, it's a very simple family. Actually, there's not much money over there. So he told him, you know. So he says, Yisrael, man, what are you doing? He says, you're not going to be able to learn. The guy's not going to be able to support you. You want to sit and learn? That's your dream. You're not going to be able to. What's going to be? So the Chofetz Chaim says, you're right. You're right. I didn't think of it. My mother told me. I just immediately said yes. So he said, quickly go and break off the shidduch. So he went to go break off the shidduch. And on the way, he sees a whole gathering of people in the street. And he looks over and he sees, Chmanel Tzlan, there was a fellow there that must have had some sort of disease. He was having some sort of convulsion. And everybody was standing around him. They couldn't do anything. You have to wait till it passes. And everyone was standing around just, you know, looking sadly at him and waiting for it to finish. And he's rolling around in the mud. And finally he finishes and he gets up, very embarrassed, and everybody is around there watching him. Someone hands him his hat and helps him dust himself off. And the Chofetz Chaim says to himself, why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu want me to see that now? He wanted me to see that now because he wants me to see what happens. I'm going to go and embarrass this girl. I'm going to go break off the shidduch. It's going to be very embarrassing. He says, I can't do it. It's a sign from Hashem that I'm not supposed to do it. And he married. And that was the wife of the Chofetz Chaim, a great woman, who was Moser Nefesh. She was very poor. They were very poor, but she was Moser Nefesh, and she allowed the Chofetz Chaim to learn. And for many years, his whole life, he became the great Chofetz Chaim. I want to tell you another story. Unbelievable story. There was a fellow, I'll tell you the exact name, is Rabbi Israel Yehuda Lebovich, who one time was visiting the Munkach Rebbe, the Minchas Alozer, a very famous tzaddik, earlier half of the 1900s. And the Munkach Rebbe asked him, tell me, do you know why the Chassam Sofer, imagine you've all heard, the Chassam Sofer was the Gadol HaDor in Hungary, in Presburg, Nifter in the 1840 about or so. He lived, he was one of the great, amazing, not only a Torah giant in his time, but till today, his descendants are great Torah leaders. Their lawyer Rebbe, who's just Nifter last year, was a descendant of his. And Dasen Gishtetner, you have many other. The Sofer family themselves, tens and tens of Sforim have been written by this family. A dynasty of Torah. So he asked him, do you know why the Chassam Sofer is so accepted in all, by Hasidim, by not Hasidim? Everyone pays homage. The great Chassam Sofer. He says, what is it about the Chassam? He wasn't Chassam, he had a jealousy. He was wanting to learn the lesson. So he says, you know, I know one story that I heard, and I'll tell you one story about the Chassam Sofer. He said, there was a bacher in the yeshiva. His name was Rabbi Yisrael Yitzchok Aaron Landsberg. In the yeshiva, they used to call him Yitzchok Aaron. Yitzchok Aaron Schulzberger. That's what they called him. That was his name. And Yitzchok Aaron came to the yeshiva. He was 12 years old, and he was already an Ilui Nifli. He was well known as a brilliant, brilliant budding Talmud Chacham. Extremely talented, very, very smart, extremely good memory. And the Chassam Sofer would do every single year, after 3 years, he would review his shiurim. It was a 3-year cycle of whatever Masechta they did. I don't know, however they broke it up. But it was 3 years he would go back and review from last time. And then he would add on new thoughts that he had this time around to whatever they had learned 3 years ago. So this Yitzchok Aaron Schulzberg, he told the Bacharim, he told the other boys, He said not everybody could remember what the Chassam Sofer said in Shir, and he was very brilliant, and he was a very good writer also. And he said that I'm willing to write down all the Shirim of the Rebbe and give them to you. You know, in the yeshivas, to have the notes of somebody who knew was in the Rosh Yeshiva Shir is a big thing. As Bezes Hashem, you'll all learn one day. So he said, I'll write them down and I'll sell them to you. And they said, you'll sell them to us, we're going to give you 5 gold coins, which is a very big amount in those days. He could help, he was very poor, and the 5 gold coins would help him for a long time. So he said to them, not only will I write down for you what the Chassam Sofer said, I'm willing to write down for you every movement that he makes. When he bangs his hand, when he goes like this, when he does this. He said, I'm willing to write that down for you also. They said, you'll do that? He said, you even have the hand motions of the Rebbe and all the and everything that he does. And he says, we're willing to give you 10 gold coins. That's what he did. So it came the second cycle after this Yitzhak Aaron started writing it down. And the Chassam Sofer began his shir by repeating, as he always did, by repeating what he had said the last time around 3 years ago. And meanwhile, under the table, Yitzhak Aaron was doing all the hand motions that the Chassam Sofer had done the last time around when he had said the same shir. He said, when the Chassam Sofer gave shir, it was be'emo be'yira be'resas of Isaiah. It was so serious. And it was such a solemn thing. Everyone was so into it. And the Chassam Sofer spoke. It was a very, very serious event every single day when he gave shir. Very serious. He didn't come in joking around or whatever. So the Chassam Sofer starts giving shir, but he sees that very uncharacteristically, people are starting to like smirk a little bit. Because under the table, the Yitzhak Aaron is doing the hand motions of the Chassam Sofer from the last time. And repeating, like almost repeating the shir with him. So the Chassam Sofer stops. He notices, he feels, he senses that it's a little bit lighter than usual. And he asks someone, what's going on? Why are people looser today? What's happening? So of course, no one wanted to answer. So he turned to a bachur named Aaron David Deutsch, who was 14 years old and used to eat in the Chassam Sofer's house. He was very close with him. So the Chassam Sofer asked him, square in the face, he said, Aaron David, what's going on? So he had no choice. Couldn't buck the question. So he tells the Chassam Sofer exactly what happened. He says, Yitzhak Aaron Schulzberg is in the middle of the bachur over here, and he's doing the Rebbe's motions from last time and remembers the shir. The Chassam Sofer looks up and he says, really? He says, Yitzhak Aaron is lashing over here. He's grabbing away my shir. He closes the Gemara and he walks out. The yeshiva, the Bachram just sat there frozen. Never happened. Some sofa should walk out like that. They were frozen in place. Didn't know what to do. You can imagine what Yitzhak Aaron felt like. He didn't mean to be disrespectful or anything else. The next day, the Chassam Sofer sent around, he made it clear to everybody that he was going to be speaking. And he wanted the entire yeshiva there. He wanted everyone there. And he made an announcement that anybody who doesn't come should leave the yeshiva. Everybody better be there. And he sent also that Yitzhak Aaron has to be there as well. Yitzhak Aaron was so afraid. Not afraid that his Rebbe would hit him or anything, he was just so afraid out of the years that covered out of respect for the Chassam Sofer and the fact that he hurt his feelings and caused this whole uproar in the yeshiva, that his legs were shaking. He couldn't even walk. And the other Bachram literally like helped him walk to get there. The room was dead quiet. You could have heard a leaf rustling. And the Chassam Sofer walks into the room and sits down in the front of the room, and you couldn't hear a pin drop. You could have heard a pin drop. And the Chassam Sofer says, Bonei HaYikar, my dear children, yesterday when I was saying Shir, Ibadti es Eshtenosai. We say that Lashon Eshtenosai in Halalukos. He said, I lost my mind for a moment. He said, instead of praising a Bacher, Yitzchok Aaron Schulzberg, for his love of Chidushei Torah, and for the fact that he was so in tune with my shir that he remembered my hand motions, he says, instead of that, I transgress a very serious averos of amal ben pnei chaveiro b'rav, of humiliating somebody in public. I humiliated him in public, said the Chassam Sofer. And it got quiet, and the Chassam Sofer burst into tears in front of the entire yeshiva. And he said, I want to be mefayasim. I want to appease him, because the Gemara says that somebody who humiliates somebody in public loses his chelik in Olam Abba. So he says, so I'm asking HaKadosh Baruch Hu to please forgive me, I won't do it again. And then he says, and I am asking from Yitzchak Aaron 1,000 mechilas. Please, I'm begging you. This is the Rosh Yeshiva, the Gadol Hadar, talking to a bacher. I'm begging you 1,000 times to please forgive me. And he looked at Yitzchak Aaron and he said, are you mochil me? And Yitzchak Aaron couldn't talk. And the other bacher, like, nudged him. They said, answer the Rebbe. And he said, of course I'm mochil. Of course I'm mochil. Because Chaim Sofer said, if you're not mochil me, he says, I'm closing up shop. I'm not worthy to be a Rosh Yeshiva anymore. I'm done. I'm not teaching anymore. Imagine what that means. And the Sofer wasn't kidding around. He wasn't trying to just impress people. He was serious. He was crying his eyes out. And he said, I cannot be a Rosh Yeshiva. I cannot teach if I embarrass someone in public and didn't ask them mechila and they weren't mochel me. And only when he was mochel them, he says, now I can continue. And this Rav said to the Munkachi Rebbe, he says, maybe that's why the Chassam Sofer is accepted and known and beloved in all different sects of Klal Yisrael. Because not only his greatness in Torah and all his greatness in mitzvot and avodas Hashem, but his humility and how careful he is with other people's feelings. Rav Pamzich, Tzadik Levracha, would point out that a person could be a gentleman to the whole world. Everyone could think he's the nicest person. When he comes home, he hurts the feelings of people in his family. And he thinks like, well, I'm a pretty good guy outside the home. So in the house, I hurt my wife's feelings, my children's feelings, my siblings' feelings. He says, then the person is lacking something very serious, because the most important people's feelings not to hurt is our own family, those who we're closest to. I'll give you an example of how sensitive you need to be to hurting some other people's feelings. A guy comes into yeshiva, new sneakers, new shirt, new whatever it is, or anything. We all like when people praise us and give us attention. Somebody who says to someone, oh, I don't like those so much. So if a guy is debating in his mind, should I buy them or should I not, and you say you don't like them as much, great, you're helping him out. But if you say to the person who already bought it, he already has them, you say, not so nice. Say, no, it's devarim. What are you doing? He already bought them. Why are you making him feel bad? Or, this happens all the time, and I'm speaking to all of you, and I'm trying to listen to what I'm saying, because it's something we have to think before we talk. You say to somebody who just bought a brand new pair of sneakers, let's say, that's a common example, if I'm going to use that. But it's true about anything. Someone who bought something, and they come in, and they say, oh, wow, where'd you get those? Those are cool, where'd you get them? So I paid $150 for them. $150? Could have gotten it for $36 from my neighbor, you should have asked me. So nas tavarim. The guy feels bad, it's too late. If it's not too late, then you know, okay, great. But if it's too late, it already happened. Why are you saying that for? You just make people feel bad. We have to be very careful. And it's not true that, like, I'm nice to everybody else. Your own classmates, your own friends. These are people we have to be most careful with. And for me, my own students. My students never act up. But if they did, it's a big challenge not to, you know, not to say some of the good lines that might come to mind. Sometimes. The Gemara warns us that Ona'as Devarim is worse than Ona'as Mamon. Ona'as Devarim is much more painful. And of course, the opposite is also true. If a person is careful with other people's feelings, and they try to show honor to their friends and peers and family members, the reward is kiflei kiflayim, is so much greater. And it's the greatest thing we can do for other people, is to make them feel good, because that's what we all want. Just